Hi, Sasha.
Welcome to Free Period.
Yes.
Today, we have another family member on.
We do.
If we did every family member of mine, it would be 9 people.
Yes, it would be the whole season.
It'd be the whole season. But instead, we have my wonderful father. Oh. My dad. Steven. I don't ever call you by your name.
No, you never do, and let's not start now.
That just felt weird for me to interrupt you. Be like, it's my dad, Steven.
I didn't know if you wanted me to do the, because I don't know.
Because I know him. Yeah. You know him too.
No, but that was beautiful.
Walked in, my dad goes to Alana. It's my other daughter. When Alana and I got here, we are at Universal Studios.
Yes.
We are here at Universal Studios live. And when we got here, I was like, oh, don't worry. They know me here. We got in. She said nothing. The woman at the gate.
Yes.
I was like, oh, no, don't worry. They'll recognize me.
I know where I'm going.
And then I knew where I was going. We ended up driving to New York City.
Yeah, we ended up in New York. We somehow took a wrong turn. I think we passed the mummy part of the tram ride, and we were like, oh, I think we've gone too far.
Oh, you went to New York Street.
We went to New York Street.
We ended up in New York.
I've been coming here since I was born, basically, right? I
mean,
since I've been on all the rides.
You've been in my golf cart. I used to take you on a little tour up around Western Street and Spartacus Square.
Yep.
And took you to show you the tank. I showed you to the lake where we shot a little scene from Jaws in the lake back there called Falls Lake.
Yep.
So I used to give you the whole tour on the lot.
And
all
yet,
the kids.
And yet
we ended up in New York. Sasha was like, I swear I know where I'm going.
I swear. It's just been a while. I just need to refresh my memory. And then we got very stuck at the gate getting in because we didn't know if it was an exit or an entrance. So getting here was a classic Alana Sasha. We're in middle school yet again.
Yeah.
Us trying to figure it out. So Dad, I know actually, you might surprise me today, but I know so much about your childhood. Alana does not. Our listeners do not. Though, if they've seen The Fabelmans, they know way more now. And we are just going to start with the question, were you cool in seventh grade?
Was I cool in seventh grade? Well, I know one thing. The word cool was a popular word when I was in seventh grade. And I was not popular, therefore the word didn't apply to me. But people use that word to describe each other.
Yeah.
And I never had the word applied to myself. I only had heard the word, you know, when a car came by and a convertible top and a bunch of guys and girls with ponytails jumped in the car. And that was cool. And of course, I got on my bicycle and rode home.
So sixth grade, we can talk about all of high school. We can talk about sixth grade, okay. Seventh grade, eighth grade. Did you ever feel cool? Even into senior year, was there ever a moment where you were like, oh, I'm starting to get a handle on high school? Or was it always just, here I am on a bicycle?
You know, I felt cool when I was amongst the uncool. So there was always a kind of hierarchy of being the coolest kid in the uncool pack.
I love
that. And I only felt cool when I had a movie camera in my hand and all of my friends, who basically all grew up and became extremely cool, but we were all in that awkward period in seventh grade, and I was making little movies in the seventh grade. And they were all in my movies. They were either working on the crew or they were in front of the camera, and that's when I felt cool. But I don't think that was it. You didn't win any popularity contest making movies in 8mm when you were, 11, 12 years old.
We would have thought you
no
were cool.
Popularity
we would have
seen,
yeah, Alana yeah. and I would have thought you were cool. We would have wanted to be involved somehow in the movies that you were making.
If I could throw a football or catch a baseball, that would have been really cool.
Because explain to our listeners and Alana where you grew up and what, you know, where were you for middle school?
What I consider to be my ancestral home is Scottsdale, Phoenix, Arizona, because, you know, we moved from New Jersey. I went from the third to the fourth grade. And so we moved from Haddon Township, New Jersey, directly to Phoenix, Arizona. We stayed at the Parkley Alice Apartments in near downtown Phoenix. I went to a fourth grade school there. Grandview was the name of the school. I used that name in The Fabelmans for the high school that Sammy and his sisters go to. I just sort of used my first Arizona school name for the school in the movie, Grandview. And but it wasn't a high school. It was a elementary to middle school. And I went there. And pretty much was in Phoenix all the way up until the end of my junior year in high school. Went to Arcadia High School in Phoenix, Arizona. My dad got transferred again, which is what brought us from New Jersey to Phoenix. My dad left RCA, got headhunted by GE, and then my dad got headhunted by IBM, and that's what moved us to Northern California. So I completed high schools both semesters in Northern California.
Got it.
I mean, when I watched The Fabelmans, my favorite, I think in the first 10 minutes, because one of my earliest memories of being Jewish was not seeing Christmas lights on my house, mm-hmm. and me asking my dad and my mom, like, why do we have the darkest house during this time? And they were like, I think my dad made some offhanded comment, like, what do you mean? What do you mean there's no Christmas lights? You want Christmas lights? Like, no, he was not. But having that explained to me as a young Jewish girl of being like, we don't do Christmas lights. And I felt seen. I really did feel seen from
yeah,
that scene.
I guess in ancient Egypt, in ancient Egypt, you know, they didn't need the 10th plague to identify the lamb's blood on the lintel.
Right.
You know, all they needed was to go past the house with the Christmas lights, and that's where the Jews would be safe. With all right. the dark houses, they would have been spared.
Yes.
And the Christmas lights would have been doomed.
Totally.
Back in ancient Egypt, I don't think that's out of sequence with what really happened in history. But I just know that I used to negotiate with my parents. I was absolutely ashamed and embarrassed that we were the dark house on the block. And there were not a lot of Jewish people on our block, so you could look up and down the street. And our neighborhood used to win contests every Christmas for the best neighborhood. Crystal Terrace Avenue, we used to win contests. The neighborhood did. And people were going through our neighborhood in the snow with Christmas lights festooned everywhere. The traffic was bumper to bumper. People would slowly drive up Crystal Terrace Avenue looking at all of the Christmas lights on both sides of the road. And, of course, they would go past a house that was dark. And that's where we lived. And I kept trying to get my mom and my dad. And I said, can't we just put Christmas lights around the door? No, we're Jews.
Yeah.
Okay, can we put a menorah in the window with different colored light screwed into the menorah? No, we're Jews.
Yeah.
Can we put a red light screwed into the porch light? Could it be red? No, they'll think we're a brothel. You know. And so finally one day, I decided, my sister Ann and I, we had a color wheel in the house. And got an extension cord, plugged in the color wheel, took the color wheel outside and aimed it toward the front door. While the cars, by the way, were just enjoying all the Christmas lights on both sides of the street. And I put on a sheet like Jesus, and I put red paint on my palms. And I basically stood up against the door, and I was a crucifix on the door of the house. And all of a sudden, we attracted so much attention for that. And I got punished. Oh, my God. My dad freaked out. My mom actually thought it was pretty cool. My mom thought it was really funny.
She would have thought
she started laughing.
Experimental
but
theater.
My dad didn't like that at all. And they sat me down and they gave me a big lecture about pride in Judaism.
Yeah.
And I said to my mom and dad, I am proud, but can't we have Christmas lights like everybody else? And I shot that scene for The Fabelmans.
I was there that day.
You were
day
there that
set.
Day we shot that scene. That scene didn't make the cut of the movie.
Yeah.
Because the beginning was kind of long and I was trying to shorten the beginning, but I shot that scene.
Yep. I was there for that shoot. Also, speaking of seventh grade, even conducting this interview, I was in the leather chair, but it kept squeaking under. Like every time I moved, it was like, listen, just do you hear that?
It's folly.
It's folly.
It's folly.
It's folly. And so I had to move to the ground. So now I'm
you're
sitting
just covering for your dad's flatulence. You're being so kind. You're such a wonderful daughter. You're covering for me.
I'm like, these chairs, they just keep making noises.
Like a whoopee cushion.
But it is. I'm also,
this is how we record in my house, too. You're always on the floor.
And
I'm always in a chair.
I prefer the floor. I'm like mom, I think. I prefer sitting on the ground.
Yeah, Kate likes to sit on the floor.
Kate. Even say Stephen and Kate. Okay, so, yeah, I was going to say that's like, that is artistry, that crucifix moment. That is, how old were you then? You must have been much younger, I think.
Oh, I was 7. But I know that when we go back to talking about what is cool.
Yeah.
You know, I had always felt that when you had to recite in class or you had to do a verbal book report and you had to stand up, that some of the kids that would actually have read the material and processed the material and absorbed it through their own age and experience, and then would interpret it for the class. When it was a great interpretation of something, I thought that was ultimately the coolest thing.
Oh.
When somebody could stand up in class and impress me, you know, and sometimes it was surprisingly some of the most popular kids in school.
Oh, really?
Impressed me, and sometimes it was the kids that weren't so popular that impressed me.
Would you go up to them after class? Do you feel brave enough to talk to them? Like, what were your interactions like with the popular kids?
Well, the interactions were basically with the popular kids. I would be too shy to walk up to any of them and start a conversation. There was a girl who I had a big crush on. Her name was Janet. Don't remember her last name. And I was trying to talk to her for a whole, I guess, year in school, and I didn't have the courage. And then one day I had an excuse to talk to her. She had a little thing on the tip of her nose, and I just wanted to caution her. I said, Janet, you have something on the tip of your nose. And she went, oh, thank you. And she reached up to her nose and touched it and looked at it, and it was a booger.
Oh!
And she just stomped off.
Shut down.
She just stomped off. She was so upset, she stomped off.
Oh, and you were
and that story is in the Fablemans. I actually used that story in the Fablemans. But so I never really could crash the popular kids. But what eventually worked when I got a little bit older and I was making my movies were getting a little more
traction.
Well, not traction so much.
They were getting Jaws.
They were getting a little more complicated in the production values. You know, I'd go off and make westerns and little war movies in the Arizona desert, and I would need leading men and women to be in my movies. And so I'd go to a lot of the popular kids and say, would you like to come out Saturday to Camelback Mountain and be in one of my films? And they would always want to do it. So I ingratiated myself to a lot of the popular kids in school through my own movies, directing them as my leading men and women. And also I was in theater arts in high school, right? And so I loved, you know, being a student director on stage or being a production manager. And we did, what did we do? We did Guys and Dolls as a musical. We did Arsenic and Old Lace. Oh, we did I Remember Mama. And I was always really active in those school, you know, middle school and high school productions. And there's a whole other level of popularity, because then you are grading on the curve of the culture. You're grading on the curve of the arts. And everything else falls away. It doesn't become important at all.
But do you find that still applies today, where you know, casting popular kids? Because I feel like that even, we always talk about how we're still seventh graders to this day. And I feel like in a lot of your movies, there are quote unquote popular kids as the leads, where they're these like hunky, beautiful, sensitive but intense characters. And I wonder if like seventh grade or middle school still applies today, or do you still feel like you're in seventh grade?
No, thank God I'm. I push past all of that, and now they just exist as good material to make movies from.
Yeah,
you know, and so I go back really, and I'm very nostalgic, as you are, yeah. Sasha. You're very nostalgic, and we both love to go back into the past. Katie, you know, her mom, my wife, is not nostalgic that way, but we are, and some of your siblings are nostalgic. Yeah. Not a lot of
not
them.
Not a lot. I mean, we kind of talk about this on the podcast. I'm extremely nostalgic. I'm the one who's always sending friends videos, mm-hmm. old videos of them, photos of them. And I just, for once, want to be the recipient of old photos that I've never seen before. I would love someone to surprise me with like an old photo of me from college that I've never seen. Because I've looked through my archives, like my photo library. I mean, I've been documenting and taking photos and taking videos and making movies since I was so young with the Barbie, you know, I made these Barbie movies and I had a video camera. And so I'm constantly sifting through old material constantly and feeling that sick feeling in your stomach. It's this bittersweet feeling where it's a knot in your stomach and you want to cry, but you also want to relive old memories and go back. And I feel like I obviously got that from you, because I think, Eve, you know, I found a diary entry from when I'm 12 and it's like, I miss when I was 10. Life was so simple then. No fights. It was just CPK on the weekends and Dance for Kids on Sundays. CPK. Day on Saturdays, Dance for Kids on Sundays, and my only friend was Layla. Now it's just so much more complicated as a 12-year-old. So even when I was 12, I'm like missing the year 2000 and 2002. Right. And that, I think, applied to, I don't know if you do this. I don't know if I've ever asked you about this, but when I'm in a place in my life where I'm happy, rather than being present in that moment, I start worrying about how I'm going to miss that moment.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Really?
Yeah, I'm the same way. When I reach a level of you know, nirvana, I say, well, this is going to be short-lived.
Yes!
I'm going to be remembering this for the rest of my life.
Same!
And I don't enjoy the moment in the moment. I'm always mourning the passing of the moment.
Me too.
We got to fix that.
What do we do?
I don't know. We got to work on that.
I remember, like, on my wedding day, which Dad was there.
I wasn't. I'm sad about it every day of my life.
I'm sad you weren't there, Alana.
I know.
So sad.
She was playing DC.
You were playing DC.
I was playing DC.
You actually talked about, you're like, I think we can do it. I think we can get there.
I was like, oh, I don't
helicopter.
Even know. I've never had to get somewhere so quickly. And I was like, I'll play this show. I just won't play five extra songs. I just like, I'll play the show. I'll get on a plane. I'll make it for like the first dance or something.
Oh my God. Well, at the wedding, I remember I was very present for that, but I also knew, I was like, yikes, I am setting myself up for deep nostalgia. And just, I mean, since the wedding, I'm like, I don't even want to see the footage from the wedding yet because I want to savor it. I have
cut together my own camera footage from my phone, and I have not sent it to you because you have said countless times I'm not ready to be nostalgic yet about the day I met, you know, I married Harry. I'm not ready to do that yet. But I've got a standing by.
I know you do. I'll hit you up when I'm ready. But I as a kid, I was always so nostalgic. And I remember, you know, even just like over the summer, you never shot movies during the school year. I think that was a rule that you and Mom established. Or I don't know if it was just coincidence, but we were never in school when you were shooting movies unless they were taking place in LA, but like on location, like for Saving Private Ryan, we were in Ireland and England, and that was summer, right?
Yeah, that was summer, but also all you guys went to Krakow in January, February of 1993 to make Schindler's List, and you lived 4.5, close to 5 months in the most brutal cold winter I've ever experienced, and you were all there in Krakow, Poland. And, you know, the schooling was done, you know, you were homeschooled.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when I couldn't shoot a movie, when I needed the winter, and I would shoot a movie you were taken out of school because I could not, reconcile because I would lose my train of thought. I would lose all my focus. I'd be worried about my family and I would miss you so badly that Mom, created a situation, thank God for her, where we basically took your kids out of school and traveled.
Yeah. But I remember like a year after whatever location we were on, I would be nostalgic for that time.
Yeah.
And it was like England was Spice Girls. I was 7, 8 years old. That was Saving Private Ryan. And that house in England. I mean, we must have only been there for 3 months. But
which,
like,
Spice Girl did you meet when we went to that show?
We went to the premiere.
We went to the premiere of Spice World.
We did. We went to the premiere.
I met all of them.
I actually
was just thinking about this and trying to remember. Ginger was the nicest. So was Mel B. Mel C was also lovely.
I love Mel C.
And Baby Spice, Ginger was, and Baby were my favorite.
We always wanted to be, because she's blonde.
Yeah, because she was blonde.
Yeah. She was blonde.
Alana and I always wanted to be the blonde.
I know.
Tiny little
button nose,
big eyes.
Baby Spice.
Yeah.
It was never Baby Spice on the playground.
No, and I
was always Sporty Spice.
I was cast as Sporty.
Why? We're not Sporty.
No, not
Why
at
were
all.
We Sporty?
You played soccer, to be fair.
But like, I wasn't really that
I
sporty.
I played volleyball and football to fit in. I played football to fit in. Which was very cool. Flag football. And I remember being like, I'm running back because it was the only position I knew when someone asked me what position I played, but I was not running back.
I don't even know what running back
is. It was the only position I knew the name of, but I was not running back. You used to come to all my games.
I came to your basketball games.
Oh, yeah.
Just to watch you run around and then defensively put your hands in front of your face whenever they were going to pass you the ball. You went into a position like, not me. And you literally put your hands in front of your face like you thought the ball was coming between your eyes. But then when it didn't come to you, you get back into that defensive position and you'd be bouncing around the court and then they get ready to pass it to you and you duck and put your hand over your forehead.
Oh my
Don't
God.
Pass it to me. And it cracked me up.
Oh,
I was
you were playing the part of a basketball player.
Yeah, when I was not in the eyeline of a player.
It's something visually you really need to see.
Oh yeah, I'll do a visual of what I'll do it and post it on Instagram of what
even
I did.
I didn't know you played basketball. You played ball. You played ball.
At my middle school, you know, in fifth, sixth grade, it was so sporty, my school, my elementary school, that I feel like there was no real like theater program. So I had no choice but to just be sporty.
Play ball.
I was fine at volleyball. I was fine at it. I tried football, never did soccer, and then basketball. But that's famously the...
What did you play?
I played soccer because my dad, well, the thing is, my dad tried with Esty, my eldest sister, because my dad was a professional soccer player, and he tried with Esty, my eldest sister, but instead of her being aggressive, like my dad, I'm sure my dad, I mean, you've met my dad, I'm assuming that he went on the field and was like, my daughter is going to be the best, like probably like bragging to all the other parents, and right. Then Esty went on the field and was doing like pirouettes and picking flowers and like my dad probably like had a brain aneurysm screaming at her being like, Esty, the ball is that way. And so then my dad, when I was younger, I wanted to obviously like I wanted to, you know, be with my dad all the time, and I had said, can I play soccer? And he goes, you will train for 6 years. I trained for 6 years to be a part of AYSO.
Oh, which you were AYSO?
Yeah, you pay to get on a team. It's not even like you audition for a part in a team, like you pay someone, they put you on a team, and then you just play. And my dad wouldn't let me join AYSO until I trained
for 6 years.
And then by the time I was like, I think I started playing in middle school, and then by seventh grade I was like, I want to go to bar and bat mitzvahs like on the weekends, and like I can't play ball.
I know.
I can't play ball. I gotta go to bar and bat mitzvahs. So I think I played for like 2 years on AYSO, and then I was done. Yeah. But he made me train. Like we would do, I mean, that was like our father daughter like thing, but I was like, Dad, just let me play.
He paid to get you in, so eventually they would pay to keep you playing.
Yeah, yeah, he thought he knew. And then I was
he had
like
a plan for you.
Yeah, he did have a plan for me, and then I failed.
And then music.
Well, I got back with music.
My dad had a plan for me, too. He wanted me to go either into electrical engineering like him, but I was so bad at math, I think it crushed him, that I did not have the capacity to understand basic algebra problems. And I think that was really hard on my dad, that I didn't have that part. I got sort of my mom's DNA more than my father's when it came to art or science. And my dad was a scientist. But that was something that I know that he really wanted for me. And it was sad to disappoint him. And I tried really hard. I mean, I really worked hard. He got me a math tutor, which made it worse. Because, you know, it's a real art to be a teacher in anywhere in the world. I believe that teachers are artists, because you have to be able to communicate complicated, you know, equations, but find visual metaphors to make kids like me that didn't quite were more visual than I guess you call it logical.
Yeah,
I didn't have strong logic or like math logic in my brain. But it just muddied the waters. It made it a lot harder for me, because some of these teachers that my parents hired to get me to my dad hired to get me to be a better student at math and science and chemistry. They just made it unfathomable. So I really avoided it. But I know that my dad, when I got older and I became a director, and we'd have these long talks about that, my dad would always say, well, gee, Steve, I always wanted you to be get into the computer industry like me, but I'm really happy that I get to go to your premieres.
So you obviously were around when Sasha was a teenager. Obviously.
Oh, yeah.
What was Sasha like in seventh grade? Like, what do you remember dropping her off at school? Like, what was her vibe when she came home? Like, what was Sasha about in middle school?
What Sasha was in middle school, I used to always say there was no radar ever invented that would detect Sasha, that would show that she was the cause, the root cause of some of the things that her siblings got blamed for.
Stop.
That she you don't ascribe to that, but there were so many times where Sasha would always be the invisible girl, having you know, done something that somebody else got the rap pinned on them.
Was Theo the most of the time? Was he blamed?
Oh yeah.
Was it Theo?
Oh yeah.
Theo got grounded. Oh, Theo was grounded every weekend.
Yeah, Theo got blamed for a lot of stuff. But I didn't know that he didn't do some of the stuff he got blamed for.
It was all Sasha.
But
like, for instance, you know, if there's two kids and one kid starts screaming, "Stop it! Stop it!" It could be that Sasha is pushing Theo with her finger, poking him in the arm. While she's doing that, she is defensively yelling, stop it.
God,
so when I come
Sasha.
Running upstairs,
blasphemy.
Theo is implacable. He's not reacting, and Sasha's kind of crying
as if
Theo did something to Sasha when she instigated the whole thing.
Okay.
So, the mastermind of the family.
You're bright red.
Sasha's bright red.
I'm bright red because I'm like, this has been my...
Print the legend.
Defending myself for so long. Every time we're at a dinner table and we're talking about, okay, this was pre seventh grade though. Okay. I would say this was more like third, fourth, fifth. But okay, fine. But
six, seven, eight.
This was your no waffing. Your no waffing.
Oh well, yeah.
Yeah.
You can talk about that too. We're very open about. Well, you can talk about anything, honestly. Okay. But everyone says I was like the sneakiest. You know, I was the one instigating everything. I swear to God, I just wanted peace. And Theo's the one who hid under my bed and lifted it.
That's true.
And Theo's the one who did it. Theo and Max would totally like gang up on me as a kid, all the time. The two of them, and maybe. I just think blasphemy.
Blasphemy.
Blasphemy. I disagree. I'm just, okay, that's, well, okay, continue. Anyway.
Well, you know, I'm very nostalgic. So all the kids occupied an entire wing of our house that we've always lived there, yeah. Kate and I. And we have an empty nest because the kids are all on their own. And there's a long corridor where all the bedrooms were, where Sasha and all of our kids lived. And when I walked down that corridor, it used to be, it was always a clean corridor. There was a rug. It's not there now. There was a really pretty, you know, rug with different rainbow colors on it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was always one room with a bedroom door closed with 9 or 10 Barbie dolls all lined up outside the room. And Sasha would not sleep with the Barbie dolls in her bedroom because she said, when it gets dark in there and I start to go to sleep, they come to life and they start moving around. And so they can't sleep in their room. I'll play with them all day long, but I basically have to evict them when the sun goes down.
Oh, my God.
I truly believe they would come to life. I really believe they would come to life. I mean, really.
I know you
all
did.
My stuffed animals, but then all my stuffed animals.
No, you thought they would all come to life. Sometimes it wouldn't just be Barbies.
Yeah.
It would be a rabbit and a turtle and a bunch of other plush toys lined up outside only your door.
Yeah. Well, I think I also thought they were out to get me because during the day I would put them in compromising situations that, yeah, they would seek vengeance later. So I get
this
it.
Before or after Toy Story? Did you like see Toy Story were like...
No, it was...
This is before Toy Story.
Before.
So you were... You
I'm going to sue the writers of Toy Story. I really had an imagination. Well, I mean, I really had a vivid imagination and I was terrified of everything, but me being terrified of it only made me more obsessed.
That's why you're a good audience, because what I used to do to put them to sleep at night, I tell them all stories. I go from room to room telling my kids bedtime stories. I make them all up. And sometimes I'd come and I'd have a little laser pen with a little either green or red laser
light. It was red.
It was red laser light. And I'd come into the room and I'd just crack their door open this wide, maybe 2 inches wide, to get the tip of the pen through. And I would turn it on and they knew that red light meant Tinkerbell was coming into the room. And I'd fly the light around the ceiling and down the walls. And Sasha would always put her hand out and I'd try to aim the laser so that the laser would wind up in the palm of her hand so she could be holding Tinkerbell in her palm.
Mm-hmm. Are you?
And yeah, and then I tried to time it so when Sasha would slowly close her hand, mm-hmm. I turned the laser off so she would think she had captured Tink inside of her closed hand. Right?
Movie magic.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He just did that with me.
I
not
did.
Theo.
I didn't know. No, I did do it with the guys, not with the boys.
Nah, the guys. But that was the... And then also you did snack stories before bed.
Sweet stories.
Sweet stories. Not snack stories?
Were they snack or sweet? stories.
Sweet story. No, sweet Saturdays and sweet Sundays were when we were allowed to have sweet cereal on the weekends.
Right.
But nice. Snack stories. It was called snack stories. And that's when, so my mom was very health conscious, I feel. And then my dad and I think to this day, like you and I have exact same taste in food.
Yeah, we do.
Like we love that. Mom likes dark chocolate and like nuts. Dad and I like Twinkies and Fruity Pebbles and like we like the sweet, you know, naughty stuff. But I
Pop-ups, Toast and Pop-ups.
Oh yeah, Pop-Tarts.
Pop-tarts.
But you would do something called snack stories where you would come into my bedroom before it, which is so funny that we would just right before I fell asleep with a small cup filled to the rim, but behind your back. You kept it behind your back. I didn't know what was in the cup. And you would tell me a story, but then ask me questions after the story. It really set me up for like English class.
But it was about comprehension. I was asking you stories. I did make sure you were paying attention to the stories.
Exactly. It was SAT. Tutor before SATs. And you would, if I got a question right, you would just take out a snack and I'd close my eyes, open my hand, and then, and it was actually a very trusting exercise because I really did have...
You couldn't look at what the snack was I gave you. You had to taste it and identify the snack.
Yes. But you were giving me like Twinkies and stuff before bed, which is really funny. That...
So how many listeners do you have that are now suddenly going to say that I corrupted my children with chemicals?
Oh,
I gave them chemicals before they went to sleep at night?
It was the 90s. It's everything's forgiven. We didn't know.
We had dial-up. Anything before dial-up, nothing.
But then I was telling, you know, Alana... on a recent podcast, I was saying that, you know, I used to be very, you used to drop me, Theo Sawyer, off at school when I was in like fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And you would blast the Guns of Navarone.
Over and over again.
The intro?
Yeah, the James Robertson Justice spoken intro that opens up the, this is the movie that was directed by J. Lee Thompson, Carl Foreman's Guns of Navarone and there's a spoken intro, which as a kid, when I was 12, 13, 14 years old, I memorized it.
See?
And I would sit in the car and I would first put on the soundtrack without the spoken words. And then I would speak.
Greece
and the islands of the Aegean Sea have given birth to many myths and legends of war and adventure. These once proud stones, these ruined enchanted temples bear witness to the civilization that flourished and then died here.
And
I go through the whole thing. It was like 4 minutes long.
And you'd blast it. It would be every day. It was a monologue, and it was every day. And Theo and I would be like, Dad, stop, turn it down.
In the back seat of the car, stop.
Because it was so embarrassing to us. That, like, imagine me in sixth grade just trying to be cool, and then my dad rolls up, like, blasting this Guns of Navarone. And I remember Theo and I asked you to drop us a block away. Do you remember when we'd ask you to drop us a block away?
You didn't want anybody hearing the music or the spoken words in front of the drop-off line at the school.
It was so embarrassing.
Were you heartbroken? Were you heartbroken?
It wasn't that I was heartbroken. I think there's a little bit of the grim fairy tale aspect of my comedic relationship to my kids, where I tortured them a little bit. Yeah. I would push it a little bit too far. I wouldn't when they would scream, Dad, you gotta drop me off before school, I would say, well, that's dangerous. You could get kidnapped.
Oh yeah, it's true. And then seventh grade came around. That's when I went to Marlboro, seventh, eighth, ninth. And then that's when I started, you would come to see me in plays.
Well, I love the plays that you did with Emily.
Emily Goldwyn.
Can we talk about Bat Boy?
Oh, let's talk about Bat Boy.
How about Bat Boy?
How about
Bat Boy? I've seen so many videos of Bat Boy photos.
What a production.
Incredible.
It was an epic.
It was my peak.
Insane.
It was a high school epic.
I loved it. I'm sad I wasn't there. Emily, both you and Emily killed it.
Oh, Emily was a star of school after that.
I couldn't believe it. I knew at that moment that daughter of mine was going into show business.
Mm-hmm. I gave it my all. I have another character called Lisa, and Rick and Lisa are actually quite similar. I have a lot of characters, which you bore witness to.
Well, Sasha has the best Australian accent I've ever heard in my life. We had to do a video for Australia, and I panicked because I don't know how to do an Australian accent. So I sent Sasha a text message being like, can you say these lines and send me a voice note? And you're like, of course.
You did a really good job.
But it's because I was mimicking you.
But you're really...
I need to mimic. I have to mimic you.
But this is why you're an actor. Like, this is why.
I'm in the movies.
You're in the movies. We're on the movies.
Technicolor.
Kella.
Hey, Kella. But I am curious to hear more about, like, not to make it about me.
We all want to hear. I'm having the best time hearing about your childhood.
Because it is interesting to get a parent. We haven't had a parent, or we've had parents on. We have not had one of our parents on.
No, not one of ours.
So it will be so interesting to hear your perspective of, like, you know, we've talked so much about how I felt so awkward and uncool all those years and felt so... I felt so awkward.
Well, you were finding yourself, as everybody, you know, spends awkward years finding themselves, and I'm still finding myself. I mean, I don't think that ever stops, that you never reach a level where you accept who you are. I mean, I certainly have never done that, and I don't think any of my kids have done that. And you've gone through all these different stages where you are continued to experiment and explore, you know, your far horizons, and, you know, and she always surprising me. You would always surprise me. Like one day, she came downstairs and she said, "Dad, I'm going to be an actress." And I said, "Oh," it made sense to me because you're always acting out. So I thought that wasn't too far from your comfort zones. And you said, "So can you video this, Dad? Just get your video camera, because I video everything. I still do. I do it with my phone more. And I used to have those big Sony, you know, 2K, 4K mm-hmm. cameras, which I still have. But even the little beta cameras when they were very small. And we do family videos every year. They're usually about an hour long, and we cut them all together, put music to them. And it's a whole year in videos. Of all of our,
it's like a bat mitzvah.
It's like a bat mitzvah montage.
It.
Yeah,
bar.
We do it every. We've done it since like 1992. What?
1992.
92 was the first one.
Sorry, 94 was technically the first one, but then we went back and made 92, 93.
That's right. We went back.
Yeah.
So you know, the kids are very accustomed to that camera going. So she said, "Judge, you get the video camera, and I'll come downstairs." And so I got my camera standing by, and then 5 minutes later, she comes back downstairs. And you're sobbing. You're sobbing. Real tears are rolling down your cheeks. And you come over to me and you're shaking and you're scared. And I said, "Sasha, what's the matter?" And you said, "There's a raptor in my room. And it tried to jump through the window to get me. And I got away from it. But Dad, you've got to go upstairs right now. The raptor." I closed the door, but the raptor's in the room right now. And it was absolutely, I, of course, that was the first time I realized, maybe I should put her in a few of my movies.
It was my best audition.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
So then we started. That's right. In seventh grade, my dad put me in the terminal.
Right.
And I played the girl in the airport, the spoiled brat, who yells at Tom Hanks for breaking. He's helping me close my suitcase and he breaks it.
Oh, right.
It.
He sits on it?
He forces it down and then
with
it breaks
both the palms of his hand and it's sort of made of that kind of plastic
right.
and it kind of implodes.
Right. I found my diary entry from that day and I it's actually quite sad. It's like I had a lot of fun, but I think I probably looked really ugly.
No.
I felt that because I was so uncomfortable. I had braces and acne and I remember I was in an outfit that like was so uncool, quote unquote. It was because I was just, you know, I wasn't.
You were playing a character.
I was in a.
It wasn't
role.
You.
Right.
But I had so much fun that day. And that was that the first movie you put me in? Or was there one? I was in Love Letter, but that was
Love Letter.
Movie.
Nora Ephron put you in.
Mixed Nuts.
You were a little angel in Venice sitting on a bench with other little costumed angels.
And Steve Martin like goes by on it. But wait.
And you were the only one looking in the wrong direction.
Exactly.
No.
Which so individualized her.
Yes.
Because everybody else was conforming to Nora's direction and you were looking off camera.
I just remember that day my gloves were really itchy and I really didn't want to be wearing them. I mean, diva. I didn't want to be wearing
your memory
them.
Memory is so
But
crazy.
Then you were in Munich.
I was in Munich at 15. And that was, I remember, oh God, this is so like, whatever. It's fine. I remember, you know, I had to cry. I had to cry.
Right.
And it was my first time crying on camera. And I did it successfully.
Yeah, I thought you probably imagined the raptor still in your room.
Yeah, the raptor was in your room.
And I did it like, you know, we did however many takes and I cried each time.
You cried each time.
We did a lot of takes.
And the makeup artist went up to me after and she goes, "You're the only one who didn't need eye drops."
Star.
And then you were in Crystal Skull.
I was in, yep.
I've seen.
I punched Shia.
You were in that.
Punched Shia in the diner scene, in the diner brawl.
And then you were in The Post.
I was in The Post. Yep. Woman with Package.
Love.
It's just because it's been a tradition since I was, but I feel like I was in something. No, maybe not. Maybe it just started at Terminal.
And you weren't in War of the World, right? That was Michaela and Destry
and Sawyer. And Sawyer.
Right.
And then Max.
Theo and Sawyer were also in Catch Me If You
Can.
They were standing in the line at the bank.
Wait, but then Max is also on the plane in Catch Me If You Can.
He was behind Tom and Leo sleeping.
Sleeping.
On the flight to New York.
Oh, when he's going
Which
to
I
trial.
Which I was so
going,
jealous of
when he's
of
going
Max.
To jail, yeah.
I was so jealous of Max because like he didn't have to do anything. He just got to sleep. He had to just be sleeping on camera, and it was so funny. But that's, I mean, it's sleeping on camera is hard.
It is hard.
But no, it was, it really became, and I really was like, okay, I'm going to be an actress. And so I started doing theater at, all school productions at Marlboro.
Right.
And then, but I always wanted to be a musician. I just had really bad stage.
You were always singing.
Yeah.
You were always singing. You know, I remember the Celine Dion song from Titanic that
My
you would sing
Heart
Will Go On hanging from your four poster bed and just emoting with one hand out toward camera and her head thrown back just singing her little heart out. Never forget
Sush.
That
I know. We went over this recently, you know, when we were talking about my first experience with marijuana in ninth grade.
What? You smoked marijuana?
I know.
You're grounded. Well, no,
you're grounded.
I'm grounded. But Theo got caught. We said this on the podcast. Everything's fine. Theo got caught and then I turned myself in, which is why I will combat this notion that
we're back to the beginning.
I was the one sneaking because I felt so bad. Theo was getting in trouble because I was simultaneously like I was starting to explore that. So I remember turning myself in and you came into the room and sat on my bed and you said the worst thing that you could possibly ever say to me, which was I'm so disappointed
in you.
Yeah. And we talked about that recently and just that
the worst.
Is the worst.
I've never smoked pot. So, you know, I was a helicopter parent.
Oh yeah.
Based on having had no experience in that world.
Right.
And
yeah.
I remember I went through the 60s.
I know. My dad are the only two
your
people
dad and I are very
met.
Close in age that way.
Yeah.
And I went through the 60s and I went to Long Beach State College and it was during Bob Dylan, it was during the Beatles, it was during
Mamas
all
in
that
the
time, almost in the pop. It was all, you know, it was a crazy period of marijuana, mescaline, tie sticks. And LSD, not
like,
coke.
No.
There was no coke in those days.
Right.
It was just hallucinogens and marijuana, and I just was terrified that I was going to smoke marijuana. It would immediately get me mainlining heroin, and
right.
then I couldn't be a director. Then I couldn't be a director.
Right. Oh,
and so that kept me. That kept me from even exploring or being part of the popular college kids because everybody assumed, and I had been thrown out of two parties, which I'll never forget.
What?
Because my reputation of getting a joint when it's passed to you and passing it on without putting it near my face got me a reputation. And there were two parties, both of them at Long Beach State, where I was asked to leave because people thought I was a narc.
You had narc energy. I have narc energy.
And they thought I was a narc. So there were two parties I was denied entrance in because of that. That simple.
Had the same thing.
I had a rep.
People thought that I was a narc.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
We call it narc energy.
Narc energy.
Narc energy as well.
We've talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
We both have it.
Yeah. Because people have
Because I get uncomfortable.
I get uncomfortable. And I'm like, no.
Yeah. Same.
I mean, I can't even take Tylenol PM.
I know. It's true.
Oh, my gosh.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. You don't really drink. You don't do. You were very.
But look where we are now.
I know.
There we go. That's
because
Sash.
Let that be a lesson to you, folks.
I know. It's true. It's true. Clear mind. But you did have, sorry, this is tangential, but you did have a girlfriend, what grade?
Seventh grade.
Seventh, which is early.
Before us,
you know, and so you couldn't have been that, I mean, who is your girlfriend in seventh grade?
I don't want to say her name on the air, but I know her name, and the character in Fableman's, Monica, is based
right.
on her.
Yep.
Even though Monica happens to Sammy when he's a senior, I just went way back in my past. I went back to my Catholic girlfriend in the seventh grade whose parents made us break up because I was Jewish and they did not want her daughter going out
right.
or going to a movie with a Jewish boy. And I did get her across the way Sammy gets Monica across. I did get her a little
that
across.
That was the funniest scene. That I mean, and, it was so funny. And, it's so good.
Thank you. And when her, I found out later that it was her parents who called my parents and said to my mom and dad, we do not want him ever talking to her at school. My dad, I know, flipped out. He was, because he was talking to two anti-Semites on the telephone.
Right, totally.
But I remember the way she broke the news to me. It was so sweet. She had taken the cross that I had given her and she had put it around her neck like a going steady talisman, right? Aww. And she asked me to wait until after school was over. And I waited for her after school. And she brought me over to the blackboard. I will never forget this. She took a piece of chalk and she put me my back to the blackboard. And she drew a line over the top of my head on against the blackboard where I came to. And then she stood next to me and she took the same piece of chalk and drew a line just above her head where she came to. Then we both stepped back and her line was like 3 inches higher than my line. And then she reached behind her neck, unclasped the cross and silently gave me back the cross, burst into tears and ran out of the room.
Wait, that is the, that is insane.
And that's how she let me know that she couldn't be with me anymore because she was taller than me. But then my parents told me the gospel truth, what had really been going on between the two houses.
Oh, what? Insane. That is insane.
And that was my first kiss. That was the first girl I ever kissed.
In seventh grade. So you were 12. Were you, wait, because your birthday is December, so were you old for your grade or young for your grade?
I don't remember.
Like, did you
December 18th?
Did you get your license before your friends or after your friends?
I don't even remember that.
Okay, because I was old for my age.
I was old for my age, old for my grade.
Old for
old for my. I was old for my age.
You were. You had an old soul. Because that to me, you know, if someone was older, like, you know, I'm 1990, but if there was a student in my grade born in 89, like, just having age on someone, it automatically made them cool.
For sure.
So you, I mean, you were automatically cool.
Well, I was cool because I had older sisters. That was like the big thing because I had, Esty would drive me and my friends around and that was really cool. But then I always thought that the only reason why I had friends was because I had older sisters. Because Esty, my eldest sister, famously worked at the Cheesecake Factory at the Galleria.
My favorite place.
My favorite place.
Oh my God.
So that was Esty's first job. It was right when the Galleria opened and that was where everybody went on Friday nights if I didn't have Shabbat, which was every Friday and I could never go. But we would go to the Galleria and Esty would get all my friends free French fries and free Cokes and like free brown bread and white bread. And like, I felt so cool because I had this older sister, but then I would always, every time I would see my friends, they'd be like, can Esty get us in? Like, can Esty get us into the Cheesecake Factory? I'm like, as if it was like a club. And so then I always felt like all the boys in school just wanted to hang out with my sister because she was like older.
Well, welcome to my world with my father. You and I can relate.
Well, there you
to
go.
That.
There
they
you go.
They only like me.
They only like me because the brown bread.
Endless breadsticks. Not endless breadsticks.
No, brown bread, right? Brown bread, white bread, the best butter ever, and French fries.
But you were the eldest of your. You had three younger sisters.
Yeah, so and Sue and Nancy. I'm the oldest.
Did you make them cool? Like, were they? I don't even. I haven't ever asked this actually. Were they cool in middle school, high school?
Yeah, I. You know, I think Nancy, who's the youngest, was always pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, she certainly, yeah. And I also think that, yeah, I think they certainly had a really, really loyal, tight circle of friends. And I don't know where it was on the popularity graph. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know where that was in their own estimation.
The echelon.
But I know that they didn't have those social anxieties that I had. They didn't have the same social anxieties that I had. Yeah.
Okay, so I used to wake up in seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade, and I used to, do you remember I called it morning sickness because I would get so nauseous before school?
You would get so nauseous before school.
Because I was so...
And that's very much like my mom.
Oh,
Lee would get nauseous in the morning, especially if she was excited. If she had a great day planned and she was so excited for the day, her reaction to a great day ahead would be to feel nauseous in the morning.
Oh my God.
So you've got that directly from Lee, from your grandma.
But did you feel that before... School, Spilkes.
Spilkes. Yeah, did you have
Spilkes? That's a great word. Some of the best words are in Yiddish. I was always a bit Spilky. My name is synonymous with Spilkes.
Spilkes. Yeah. I know, and I got that from you because
But it's also a jet fuel. I think Spilkes is a good thing for me. because it makes me, it certainly makes me more aware of having to do good work or having to paint myself out of a corner.
Yeah.
Or having to be inventive if I don't have an answer, a solution. And so in a way, I've always, if I didn't have Spilkes, I don't think I would have lasted as long as I have as a filmmaker, because Spilkes is also goes hand in hand with ambition, a passion, lusting after a good story, if I can find one to tell. And there's that little nervous tickle in your stomach that can be interpreted as being a little bit, your stomach gets a little upset because there's so much excitement ahead. And I, it may just be a characteristic of my Ashkenazi upbringing, or it could just be unique to my process. But in any case, I can't live without it. I need the Spilkes.
You're making me verklempt.
I know. I feel.
I'm verklempt.
If you could go back and tell your 12-year-old, 13-year-old self anything, what would it be?
Be patient. It's all going to happen for you. Oh. But be patient. It's not going to happen overnight.
That's perfect.
Is there anything we missed talking? Is there anything else you want to talk about with middle school or high school? Or
just that I couldn't have Christmas lights on our home, but I did learn the Lord's Prayer. And had to
Sasha
speak it and had
Lord's
to
Prayer.
And had to recite it every morning in elementary school.
Sasha, yeah, I couldn't believe that Sasha knew the Lord's Prayer, and I, because we had an episode where I think it was with Benny.
Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed
be
thy
name.
Thy
kingdom
come.
Thy will
be
done
on
earth
as
it is
in
heaven. My dad and I just recite that all the time to each other. We just go through our nostalgic
year, give it up to the Lord.
That's what we do. But my favorite thing to do with you, which brings out the seventh grade, eighth grader, ninth, it just brings out the younger self in me, the child in me, is when I'm sitting at, whenever I come over, I will sit immediately at the piano and you'll be watching a movie and you'll see that I've arrived, but I've gone straight to the piano, and you'll say, you'll come up and I'll be working on a song and you'll sit down on the piano with me and then we'll create songs together and you do the top melodies,
right,
and I'll do the bottom.
Right.
And I was listening through voice notes recently and some of the melodies that you've come up with, which is like, you are a natural melody maker. You have some brilliant...
Well, I've had Johnny Williams in my life for 51 years.
But it's some... First of all, he's an amazing whistler, which I don't know if anyone knows this, but...
You're an amazing whistler?
Incredible whistler.
I can't whistle into a microphone.
Yeah,
it
won't
work.
Right.
It won't
work
on a mic.
But some of your melodies, and you and I will just sit at the piano for hours and we'll just have fun. We'll play. It's like playing. It's like what we used to do when I was really young. It's just play. And you, I let you take top always. You take top lines. And some of your melodies, like, I will end up putting those on a record and you'll have a writing.
Yeah, publishing.
You'll have, yeah.
You'll get publishing.
You'll get publishing.
Well, that's great because if you get a Grammy and I get credit on your Grammy, then I get to be an EGOT.
I'm shocked you don't have a Grammy. I think you and John Williams need to do like a collab duo album.
Well,
they say you can get a Grammy if you do a spoken album. So
yeah,
maybe I just
the
do
Prayer.
The Guns of Navarone.
Yeah,
and it'll be considered a comedy album.
Yeah.
And maybe I get it for comedy album of the year.
Yeah.
Bring it back. Bring it back. Well, Dad.
Thank you so much.
I love you. And I'm so lucky that you came from me and Mom. And I'm so lucky for your existence, and I'm so lucky for Theo's, and for Sawyer's, and for Michaela's, and for Destry's, and for Max's, and for Jessica's. I am just so blessed. We are so blessed to have all of you.
I'm so blessed. I'm the best dad in the world. Sorry.
Oh,
sorry.
It's true.
No, actually, your dad is amazing too, but I'm the best dad.
It is so crazy. Just, you're so similar to my dad, which is so crazy. I mean,
that's why your dad and me hit it off so much, so well. Yeah.
That's why you and I are such close friends.
Same.
It's the same.
We're the same.
And also, I just would like to add, everyone knows my obsession with The Sims, but in my 20s, I would come to this very office, 29, and play The Sims. My dad would be in meetings in the other room,
yep,
and I would come here solely for the free lunch and the free Sims.
Exactly.
And I would play The Sims
at my dad's computer.
Yes, part of me is like, okay.
Can we just
Alana and I want to ride the tram.
I know we want to ride the tram. That was my dream job growing up. I always wanted,
you wanted
to be
a tour guide.
I wanted to be the tour guide on the tram
you
ride
still
here.
Could.
I honestly,
you could
still
be a guest tour guide.
Yeah, I would. Exactly. That is my dream fulfilled. I that
a
was my favorite ride.
Doing a tour guide here would be a big hit.
I would
be
a
huge
hit. I think it would.
I want it to be my job. The thing is like, I mean, I've talked about it so many times, but they used to take you to the clock tower from Back to the Future. They don't do it anymore. There also used to be a part of it where you go on a bridge. I forget what movie it's from, but it like breaks down.
It breaks down, and the whole bridge like a tunnel rotates.
Yes.
So you feel like you feel the vertigo.
And I also told Sasha that the E.T. ride was my favorite ride because E.T. said your name.
He said your name.
Every time.
And that's
and
all
I
we
never
wanted.
Knew how. I never knew how. And then obviously I realized you go in and they're like, this is your badge to, you know, yeah, your
and
thing.
You got to put
like,
your name on the badge.
You put your name on the badge. Yeah.
Takes it and puts it in a queue.
Oh, yeah.
And then E.T. says your name. And I'll give you one little factoid. The woman who Ben Burtt, the sound designer of E.T., who he discovered her. She was a, she had a, she smoked a lot of cigarettes and that's why her voice was so low. He cast her, met her in a drugstore. She had never done any acting before, and she became the voice of E.T.
What?
When the movie came out and we designed the ride for the tour, she had to record 2,700 first names, which she did herself.
Are you kidding?
So every single first name that you heard E.T. recall,
oh my God,
or identify was done from the original vocal artist who did the voice of E.T.
Oh my
That's
God.
That's wild.
But then Sasha, I don't think, was in. Or did you put
Sasha?
Yeah,
100% Sasha was
no,
in.
No, because the movie was made before my time.
Well, movie was made, the movie was, came out in 82.
Yeah, and I was 90.
Yeah, made, yeah.
But it had, I mean, it was like Elena or something for me. But I was like, E.T. knows my name.
I know,
it's close.
What if
it's
I
close.
Was like,
it's
what
close
if
enough.
I just needed validation constantly. So I just wrote an E.T. ride all of
Sasha.
Seventh grade.
Goodbye, Sasha.
Just for valid, just to hear a man say my name.
Yeah.
Oh,
was
my
devastated.
God.
I miss that ride so much.
I do, too.
I really miss it.
Well, we can.
We're gonna go on the mommy ride.
Well, we're
pretend
nostalgic.
We're
just remember what it was like.
I know.
Just live in our memories.
Which I do. I know. We do. This is why we have the podcast.
I know.
Actually,
did they redo the Jurassic? This is doesn't have to be on the pod, but did they redo the Jurassic Park ride?
They
is it open?
They update graded it,
yeah,
and made
open.
It into Jurassic World.
Oh.
And it is open. Yes.
Yeah, it's open.
Yes.
I'm like, we're going.
Get on
like,
your
get
wet.
You can get. I could send you up to Hogwarts right now if you want to go up there.
Let's go to Hogwarts.
We're gonna go. Okay, guys, great to talk to you. We're gonna go to Hogwarts.
Thank you. We're gonna go to Hogwarts.
Thank you so much.
Thank
for
you.
Doing
this was the most fun.
I love this. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you,
I'm
thank
so
you,
happy.
Sasha.
Okay, I love you. I'll see you in a minute.
Yeah.
I'll see you in a minute.
And then I'm having dinner with you.
See you when we're off the air, and I'm having dinner with you tonight. You and Harry.
That's perfect. Me and Harry and Mom. Okay, that's our plan.
Okay.
Love you, Dad.
Bye.
Love you.
Thank you for listening to Free Period, a presentation of Cadence 13 and Odyssey Studio.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Bye.